Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Survivors have most likely survived the pole shift by taking safety steps, such as being away from coastlines where ocean sloshing might reach them, being on high ground, being out of river basins or ravines where flooding might carry them away, being below the ground line during the hurricane force winds in a trench so the high winds don't blow them away, being between hills if possible so tornadoes lift overhead and not where they are crouched, being under a piece of metal or sod-covered board to protect them from firestorms, being out of mountain building ranges where rock is likely to snap and buckle, and having survived, they're now ready to think about survival in the aftertime. What they will find looking about them is a world where the grid is down, no electricity or phone service, no tap water, and groundwater cloudy with volcanic dust fallout. No grocery shopping after the stores are looted of anything remaining on their shelves, and civilization brought to a halt by the broken link. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Machine Age. Consider what is necessary to run the average manufacturing plant, which runs heavy machinery. Gears, metal plates, it all looks quite solid. Let's say the building stands after the pole shift, having been retrofitted and braced, and the machinery itself is pretty durable. Some parts break, but one can replace them, so why would it not run? There are factors in this scenario that are not being considered. All the necessary small parts, the lubricants and additives that will not be available. Most lubricants are necessary to maintain a certain chemical balance, or there is corrosion. Without these lubricants, parts burn out, wear out, and you can't simply pour water or any chemical in. You need a particular chemical. The chemical industry will be very hard hit, as much of their stores are liquid and will burst, spray, disperse, and require specialized ingredients to create in the first place. So you back up endlessly, and any time there is a break in the link is broken and affects everything downstream. So it all goes down the chain. Even a tiny broken part can stop the process, as perhaps a particular metal or particular alloy is needed. Without this, a particular function won't occur, an electrical impulse will not occur, or an etching will not occur. If that alloy is missing, all the rest of the machinery becomes idle and simply is not effective. And if it's not effective, what is the point of maintaining it? What motive is there for staying and maintaining this factory? Who is going to feed the workers or pay their salary? There is simply no flow of money. Bridges are down. The grid is down. The government is in chaos and gone off to huddle and get drunk and discuss among themselves. Workers do not come out of loyalty, starving to death, to keep a corporate fat cat in business. They go off, attempting to find food for themselves. If the industry loses its skills, what occurs? Any industry that finds its skilled workers are no longer available fails. If it goes off, because it's more important to feed the family than keep the boss in power, who's going to run the factory? It's for these reasons that industry will not run, but will go idle. There are cities discovered in Central America and in China, found under the jungles or under the shifting sands, with no explanation for where the inhabitants went. These were great cities with grand steps. They had irrigation, water flowing through the city. So why did it collapse? Was it a great plague? Was it a terrible drought? Did someone come and slaughter them all? There are remnants of pole shifts where great civilizations have fallen in the past. The survivors wander in search of a better life. They are often confused as they don't know what has hit them. They are sure this is a local event, and they are off to find where the sun is shining and the grain is growing. They all wander, so your industries will be idle for these reasons. This is a quote from Zeta Talk, Machine Age, written on April 15, 1999. No emergency services will be available, as travel on broken roads is impossible. Social services are stopped as everyone worldwide is affected. Well, caregivers are focusing on their own families and their own injuries. Everyone will be looking around, dazed, expecting to be rescued. And I quote from Zeta Talk, rescue expectations. In countries where social services exist, those desperate for a rescue will begin to assume that the government will act, perhaps at the last minute, but in time to rescue them. Announcements will be made to peacefully evacuate cities and coastlines. Tents will be erected, and the population resettled after it is all over with the worst of it, the beans and rice endlessly served for supper. The military, politicians, and those holding stakes in the cities and coastlines being deserted will put selfish interests aside and become humanitarians in the end. For those clinging to this hope for rescue, we would only point out that the government today does not act in this manner, but leave many starving children and injustices in their wake daily. Stressful times will not create heroes. It will create slamming doors. Simply stated, if any are looking to the governments to rescue them and move close to government operations in the hopes this will occur, they will not only be disappointed, they will become slaves or worse at the hands of those determined to remain in control during the aftertime. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Emergency Expectations, written February 15, 2001. What the pole shift brings is no different than what life brings today. Earthquake, exploding volcanoes, floods, starvation, illness. The scope may be greater, but the effect on a local or individual basis is the same. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Survivors. The cataclysms will come quickly, and the great majority of death will be so instantaneous that there will be no time for anxiety. Concern should be for the survivors who will be injured, in shock, hungry, and looking in desperation for their loved ones. The grief that will result from the cataclysms will be no greater for any given human than the grief their normal life would sustain. Grief is something that comes to every life many times during a lifetime. Humans anticipate grieving over the loss of a loved one, who may die suddenly by accident or unexpected illness, or linger for a long, sad goodbye. Humans anticipate torrents of nature, volcanoes, tornadoes, floods, lightning, hailstorms, and earthquakes. These come sometimes without warning, but many times are anticipated. Humans anticipate societal problems, the loss of jobs or stature, family and friends deserting one, banking failures. All this can suddenly place a human into grief, but in most cases, the pending problems have been announcing themselves regularly. Any survivor of the cataclysms could have experienced a life situation where home, family, job and friends, and health disappear. This can and does today happen to many, and not just due to acts of nature. What will be different is that the anticipated assistance won't come from wealthy countries or one's own government. For most of the world, this won't come as a shock, as it is rather a shock when they do receive assistance. For wealthy industrialized countries, this lack of assistance will be a shock. Some individuals will have to learn to rely more on themselves and to work communally with others. These are lessons that life teaches in any case, however, and are not exclusive to the cataclysms. The cataclysms offer an opportunity, as does life in general, to be of service. These are times of great opportunity to be greatly of service. These are times when one can grow and discover strength within oneself previously unknown. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Survivors, written prior to July 15, 1995. As a result of the pole shift, the death rate will be high, health problems many, and in particular, starvation rampant. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Starvation. In many parts of the world, diet is restricted to what the community can grow for themselves, or catch, or kill in the forests or grasslands. There may be berries in the summer, but not in winter. Fresh vegetables in the summer, in season, but only dried roots in the winter. Essentially dehydrated for preservation. Meat may arrive only occasionally after a successful hunt and be cause for celebration. Where the community is close to fishing, rivers or lakes or perhaps the seashore, a steady diet of fish can be expected in some manner. Modern man has grown accustomed to the supermarket where fresh produce from around the world is in abundance, available. If not fresh, it has come to expect frozen foods of great variety, or dried, so that his diet is without seasons and can span the world. Bored with simply doing away with the seasons, modern man experiments with recipes from different cultures. Mexican, Chinese, Italian, Indian. What will this modern man find he has to eat after the shift, when the supermarkets are looted and no new distributions on the way? We will address this by population type, as the results vary. Those in the cities who have lost or never had experience with gardening and herdskeeping, or fishing in the wild which requires skill, will have the rudest shock. First, they will be isolated in their cities by the destruction around them, such that they cannot easily travel to the countryside. Second, food will run out in the cities, such that the starving survivors look about them and even at each other hungrily. Most will starve, getting weaker and sicker until death overtakes them. Those who give in to the urge to cannibalize will soon die also, simply because the food source will run out. Those in the suburbs, who have land about them and are perhaps conjoining the countryside, will at first deplete their personal stores, the local food markets, and then begin roaming into the countryside. The family pets will get killed and roasted, and that fat, so much desired to be shed, will be used to just keep the body going for many months. Eventually, suburban families will need to learn to forage, turning over logs in the woods to look for grubs and worms, and attempting to fish in streams or rivers. Catching small mammals such as rats, which eat just about anything, will also be a food source children may catch in their desperation, and may even eat raw if the parents are dulled by madness. Earthworms can eat sewage and rotting material, but this is not a voluminous production, so should not be expected to feed a community from their own sewage. Thus, survival in the suburbs or growing food will become a foraging practice by those able. Those in the country who farm or are familiar with gardening and hunting practices will take a different tack from the start. The farmer with cattle will soon find that his cattle are getting thin, staggering about from hunger, and will eat the herd to thin it out. Thus, the farmers in the area will finally conclude that certain animals are more useful than others in the aftertime. Chickens eat bugs, forage for themselves, and come home to lay their eggs if given a safe and private roost. Ducks likewise eat whatever grows in or around ponds, which will be numerous in the drizzle and don't require a dry spot to roost. Goats, which eat anything, and pigs, which root in the ground for whatever might be edible, can likewise be kept within limits if the surrounding country can sustain them. Some vegetation will struggle along, weeds which are hardy and plants that grow in the gloom or dim light normally. If the group had not researched and anticipated this environment, but find themselves without seed or seedlings for dim light gardens, then they will be chewing on weeds for an alternative to grubs and whatever they can catch to roast over a small evening fire. Farmers are naturally resourceful, being at the lower rungs of the ladder in all supposedly civilized cultures, and will adapt. If a particular weed grows well, proves to be edible, the farmer will husband this, grow it, protect it from wildlife, and sell it. Thus, growing food in the country is possible, depending upon the adaptability of the farmers in the area. Coastal survivors will have access to harvest from the oceans. Fish will flourish in the oceans, so survival communities on coastlines should rely upon this as a first resource. Those communities may tire of fish, so experiment with seaweed recipes for variety, and go inland to trade with other communities who will value dried or preserved fish. Inland, fish in the native ponds and riverways will likewise survive, but not in numbers greater than the environment can sustain. What do these fish eat? Algae, duckweed, bugs that live on slime in the waterways. All this is dependent somewhat on sunlight, as the base is vegetation in the waterways. Thus, native fish may actually be reduced in numbers if in gloomy areas and be considered a prize when caught. For those farmers turning to aquaculture, where plants can be grown in human sewage and then fed to the fish or livestock, this will prove to be a renewable resource that adds to the food banks. Here again, the key is light, as to turn sewage into food, one needs plants that require at least some light. End of the quote from Zeta Talk Starvation, written in December 2002. The inability of the Earth to feed its current population will soon cease to be a problem, even with the volcanic bloom that lasts for approximately 25 years after the shift. And this is all due to the anticipated death rate. And I quote from Zeta Talk, death rate. The 90% die-off that we have predicted will not occur simply because of the shift. Most will die because of depression, failure to thrive, sitting down with a slight injury and not eating or drinking, as occurs after all calamities. Mankind is used to limited calamities, where a single city suffers a quake, or a single family a devastating fire. In come the Red Cross, the rescue from neighboring towns, the assistance from neighbors. Global calamities are such that no area is prepared to go forth and rescue, and all sit and wait to be rescued. Thus, all sit and wait without rescue. India will, of course, be affected massively and has a high population density. Coastal cities, Hong Kong, Japan, LA, Paris, will be drowned to a great extent. Cities near volcanoes, Mexico City, Japanese cities, Rome, will have heavy die-off from ash. The next highest die-off will be in heavily populated areas where feeding the survivors simply cannot be done. Anyone crawling from New York City will find themselves in suburbs, endless suburbs, with no expertise in gathering or growing food. Mexico City is likewise so afflicted in the numbers it houses that cannot possibly escape and dilute their numbers into the countryside, so as to feed themselves. The only food available will be each other, fellow survivors. The effect of climate change must be taken into consideration. Population along the current bulge of Brazil will freeze, regardless of ability to survive otherwise. The Himalayas, though high and cold already, will become more cold due to their position in the new South Pole, and many will freeze there also. In short, the highest ratio of survivors will be in rural areas where there is a low ratio of human survivor to land. Second, where the populace is used to foraging for themselves, not pampered and soft such as in suburbs or cities. Third, where inundation will not catch the populace unaware, as in remote Siberia, but where natural escape routes exist, such as in the Mississippi Valley. An additional consideration is the placement of elite bunkers, where the elite will attempt domination over the survivors. This is likely to diminish hope for all there, as the kind of infighting that will occur will be so disruptive of cooperative efforts that all will go down together, with a kingpin demanding his rights. End of the quote from Death Rate, written December 14, 2002. This sounds grim, but these grim situations are with us today. Starvation is rampant, for instance, even in supposedly civilized countries like the U.S. Millions of little children go to bed hungry every night in the U.S., while the government helps the rich get richer. Human cultures today have many techniques for dealing with these dire situations, and these can be a good guide on how to proceed in the early days immediately after the pole shift. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Starvation. Envisioning the dire situation in the days leading up to the shift and following, many good-hearted folks wonder what they are supposed to do when there is a single loaf of bread for supper and thousands of mouths to feed. Of course, this is no different than today for many. Starvation is rampant around the world in many countries indigenous, so it's only in those affluent environments who wonder such things. Those already starving know how these matters are settled. But the reaction to starvation differs immensely based on spiritual orientation. Those who are self-centered jerk food from the weak and either sell it for whatever price the desperate market will bear or add it to their own stores, even if these stores are rotting for want of use. Those who have not decided their spiritual orientation, have not decided whether to be empathetic or self-centered, dither between sharing a mouthful now and then with a friend or piteous soul, or stuffing what they can hide in their pockets when around bullies, and otherwise wailing about the situation loudly, expecting to be rescued. In general, depending upon the culture and situation, segments of human society are selected to simply starve to death. This is done today in many cultures, where the very old and feeble refuse food and a tender goodbye is given during the few days of their rather painless decline into coma and death. They are expected to do this, and as these cultures are often highly service to other in orientation, such as the American Indian, afford their elderly esteem, and thus this is not seen so much as a punishment for age as an honor. In other cultures, quite without malice, the very young are given this treatment. Babies born and barely conscious are put out into the elements to die or left without milk or fluids, which quickly puts them into coma. No new mouths to feed. Lest this be viewed with horror, the alternative is that this child would be brain damaged if starving in early life, if managing to live at all, an alternative the culture is acutely aware of with examples in the community. Where the starvation has progressed beyond this point, a similar selection process is done into the group. Those already ill and not expected to be hale or recover volunteer, or an adult in a family group determines that their portion should go to the growing children or the remaining spouse. Starving or denying of thirst is not painful, and when done with love and consideration of the group, is not done in anguish. Given the situation where the culture is not highly service to other, but mixed, how then would a service to other leader proceed? The choice is for those in empathy for others to starve themselves, leaving the group under the leadership of more ruthless types, or a plan. In this case, not simply volunteers, are to be selected to starve to death, as this would ultimately leave only the ruthless. A community meeting where the matter is discussed is appropriate. It should be expected that the selfish will loudly insist that they be given first opportunity to stuff themselves. The matter should be presented in the light of what human societies have always done in the face of intractable starvation. If hunting and fishing is bringing in food, then the best hunter or fisherman should be spared. If a nursing mother is acting as wet nurse to several toddlers, then her survival affects more than just herself. If someone has a skill or talent needed for group survival or affecting this, then despite their desire to give their portion to others, they should be pressed to spare themselves. Even selfish groups will see that some approach must be taken, and after argument, consensus will prevail. All this is assuming that all means of feeding the group has been considered, all food sources included. We have mentioned that weeds and bugs should be included in the diet. In the face of starvation, eating the dead should also be considered. The soul moves on, the body rots, and better it be given in love to those struggling than rot. This is, after all, what a loving member of the group would want when volunteering to starve for the others. "Don't let me go to waste," would be his or her last words. Or is it better the hunter miss his shot, the wet nurse giving the only protein toddlers with growing brains are getting go dry, and the young become brain damaged as a consequence of their starvation? You decide. This is the end of Zeta Talk, Starvation, written November 25th, 2003. And a return to normalcy does occur. Volcanic gloom clears steadily, so that not much gloom remains 25 years after the shift. Survival communities are lean and healthy from exercise, with strong bonds from cooperative efforts. And teaching the young, being resourceful, enjoying music and stories, and catching up on the news when the occasional traveler passes through, all this will be part of life and more. An unexpected benefit is that the pole shift will be a great equalizer. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Great Equalizer: "Tumultuous times like the coming cataclysms are great equalizers. Where in stable times the strong or clever take from the weak or befuddled, and nice guys seem to finish last, during turmoil the playing field is flattened. The wealthy and influential, in spite of having forewarning about the coming pole shift and the means to arrange for their safety and comfort, will be no better off than the rest of humanity. Human nature tends to blunt the full reality of what will occur and what life will be like afterwards. The short term is considered, with the depressing long-term scenario avoided. Thus food and water are stocked in batteries aplenty, but the wealthy do not consider what to do after these supplies run out. They have all their life relied upon the services of others and comfort themselves with some vague notion that civilization and its administrators will right itself shortly afterwards, and they'll be able to return to shopping. The impoverished individual may find himself without goods or services, but as this is his status quo under normal circumstances, will mobilize himself more effectively during the aftertime. He will grieve less and ponder his options more and take risks where the wealthy sit on the remnants of their toys until death overtakes them. In like manner, those who are physically or mentally handicapped may have an advantage over those who are whole in the aftertime. They have already adjusted to being diminished and looked down upon. The palsied individual will find himself comforting those who have newly lost an eye or a hand, and the chronically mentally ill may find themselves counseling those who have gone mad from the turmoil and sense of loss. Survival is to a great extent based on the ability to adapt, and in this way those at the bottom today have an advantage over those at the top. The coming shift will thus be a great equalizer." End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Great Equalizer, written on November 15, 1995. Thank you. Survivors will also be in anguish over loved ones they cannot contact. In this regard, there may be assistance by benign aliens. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "What the heart seeks." There is often endless pain when a loved one goes missing and is not confirmed dead. Look at the MIA issue in Vietnam. Those seeking closure imagine their loved ones in pain somewhere, in trouble, needing help, lost, lonely, and are in anguish. Won't the pole shift, with disrupted communications and families spread out far and wide going to school or traveling for work or pleasure, not the nuclear family of old where all were local, create this scenario? What can be done to ease the anguish and worry? Forced separation will be one of the major reasons for mental breakdown during the days of anguish leading up to the shift and in the weeks and months following. Man is a social animal, and as any analysis of disrupted social networks in the animal kingdom will demonstrate, experiences emotional pain when separated from what is considered the family group. Dogs run in packs, and domesticated dogs are grieving when separated from their owners for any length of time. Cats run in prides, and although considered aloof by their owners, can be found situated on a windowsill or a chair in the vicinity of their owners. Birds are found in flocks and will habit no other way. This is inherent in the animal, a survival instinct, and the emotional pain caused by separation for good reason. In human cultures, expulsion from the group is considered a punishment known to bring pain. Exile, excommunication, divorce, termination. These have impacts beyond the financial and convenient, the primary being emotional pain. What will be lost when the phone lines fail, the mail no longer delivered, will be the connection between extended family members or those friends and co-workers long held dear who stood as replacements for the family bond. Beyond the worry for the other is the anguish of separation, a matter not easily put to rest and properly grieved over, as certainty is not at hand. Funerals are for the living, allowing them to come to terms with the death, the certain death, of a loved one. Else the heart is trapped, suspended. What will occur in such instances? Migration will be so commonplace as to be almost the norm after the shift. Where this will primarily be due to flooding and earthquake, survivors having scampered ahead of rising water or crawled out of the debris heap that cities will become, and secondarily due to a search for food, it is also a search for family, comrades, and to establish the sense of belonging. Shelter and food are more easily gained than the connection, which when lost takes a period of grieving before substitutes are accepted emotionally. Thus, depression will be rampant, the sense of loss aggravated, and anguish unresolved. We have often stated that those heavily into the service to other orientation will be assisted, most often sight unseen, by guides in the aftertime. This will include assistance in reuniting separated loved ones, if only via visits as contactees on spaceships for reassurance or closure, but often also as guided migration to help the heart find what it seeks. And this is the end of the quote from Zeta Talk, "What the Heart Seeks," written January 12, 2004. Survivors will sort out into those who are determined to live or those who give up, though all will be in shock at first. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Shock." Shock from a situation unexpected exists in human society today. An individual in a car wreck, walking away from the car where other family members lie bloodied and dead, has suddenly been thrown into an unexpected horror. A town where a tornado has descended with little warning, tossing not only neighbors and family about like litter, but destroying a way of life, memories, and the continuation of a livelihood. A visit to the doctor results in the grim-faced announcement that a terminal illness has been discovered. Perhaps more tests or treatment can alter the prognosis, but one should prepare themselves and family for an untimely end. A spouse announces an intention to divorce, an employer the decision to close the business and relocate elsewhere. All can descend upon one without notice and are a shock from the unexpected and devastating. Nothing new in human society. The pole shift will bring about such shock in great numbers, but with a difference. None will be spared, and all will be facing the same situation. Money will not put one into security, nor will hoarding goods change the odds, as the aftertime will be a great leveler and goods will be shared by force, if not by free will. The recovery from shock takes two routes, depending upon the nature and resolve of the person affected, and this cannot be changed by others, as it is a personal decision. If the individual, after surveying the situation, determines that life should go on and the devastation not overwhelming, they seem to shake off their disbelief and start talking about changes. This may be gone, but that remains. They had been hoping to simplify their life, and now circumstances have arranged this. At least now they will be getting their exercise regularly, and that diet will not be resisted, but assisted by circumstances. A sense of humor about the situation emerges, and they start sorting through rubble and organizing activities. If the individual, mentally computing the pros and cons of the situation while sitting in shock, determines that life after the shift will be too awful to contemplate, they will continue in shock. This is a clue to others about them that they have made a decision. Their creature comforts are gone and not likely to be seen again. Their high social status is gone. Others with greater talents and energy now commanding attention, and life as an underling simply not conceivable. For whatever reason, the person continuing in shock has decided not to make an adjustment, and attempting to force this will not bring satisfaction. Those who have dependents, children, or the injured or oldsters, but remain in shock and refuse to adjust or take action, should have their dependents removed from them. Let the person who insists on remaining in shock sit there, in shock, until death, if this is their decision. Put your energies into the living, those who have chosen life, instead. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Shock, written in December 2002. Survivors will sort into those who are willing to roll up their sleeves and help others around them, be good teammates and willing to share and share alike, or those wanting to simply continue to take advantage of others or demand services. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Service to Others. They share their resources, address the problems of each as though it were a problem for the many, sacrifice their own comfort for the better comfort of the many, and do not impede the growth or awakening to knowledge of each other. In the earth of the future, these qualities will seem to increase in people, and groups will find less and less need for artificial controls on their behavior, and more allowances for trust among each other. There are no human societies, however, that exemplify this today. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Service to Others, written July 15, 1995. The self-focused, likely to sort out into gangs given to looting as a way of life, will find things different after the pole shift. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Prison Gangs. During the shift, prisons will spill out and prisoners escape. These will, as expected, become the primary service-to-self gangs in operation after the shift. However, such gangs require a continuous supply of food and goods to continue a looting and savaging campaign. After the shift, supplies will run out quickly. Weakened and decimated by infighting, they will succumb to disease. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Prison Gangs, written March 15, 2002. But here again there will be assistance to the good-hearted from benign aliens. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Aftertime Reads. Conscientious groups of service to other humans, having prepared, will have food and shelter. There will be laughter coming from their midst as they find life goes on and good things they held precious are still in their lives. The young will grow and be curious and educated. Music still comforts, and scientific discoveries still intrigue. The service to self, having not bothered to prepare, will look to these communities as a place to raid. There will be assistance in these matters from ourselves and others. Primarily, this assistance will be in the form of blockage, where the service to self humans either cannot find the communities, cannot see them, or are distracted in some way. In this regard, we advise those communities to be remote and not advertise themselves. Those who are to find you will do so, as they will be guided to your location. Secondarily, this assistance will come in the form of active repelling, where the service to self will find their blows or missiles do not land as expected, but turn somehow upon themselves, perhaps blowing up prior to being launched or the like. It is best, therefore, for these communities to focus on survival and life afterwards, and minimally on self-defense. The best defense is a well-chosen location. End of the quote from Zeta Talk After Time Raids, written July 15, 1995. Good-hearted survivors should consider, when turning the self-centered and demanding or lazy away, the overall good of those deserving consideration. The Zetas have some advice for this ethical dilemma. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Survivor Allegiance. Decisions will have to be made. In an ideal situation, everyone is good-hearted. Everyone is reasonable. They all share. This is the optimal situation. But in reality, life will not be that dissimilar from today when decisions are made. Families say they are kicking a family member out of the house for various reasons, or someone is fired from a job or no longer allowed in an association. This will be no different. People will make their decisions for good reasons or for bad. Let's say they are for good reasons. Let's say there is someone who threatens the survival of the entire group. They have an unreasonable attitude. They don't want to work. They don't want to assist. They want a larger share. They create arguments, being selfish. The decision is made that if the group is to survive, because perhaps it has come to that, this person must be ejected. In this matter, think more of those you are protecting, the little children in the group, those who roll up their sleeves and are willing to do whatever is required. They deserve equal time, so to speak, and consideration with this person who is threatening the group. In some cases, you will have to move. You will have to pick up and leave, even in the dead of night, with your dependents to get away from a situation that is overwhelmingly bad. Think less of your sense of responsibility to those who are troublemakers, or thinking of themselves and trying to get their larger share, or dictate or dominate the group. Think less of your obligation to them and more of your obligation to those who deserve your time and attention in these matters. This would be our advice on those ethical dilemmas. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Survivor Allegiance, written September 2nd, 2003. Survivor communities will often be spontaneously formed based on who survives and what their skill sets or needs are. Other locales form a natural community setting, and I quote from Zeta Talk Spontaneous Groups. Some communities, remote and rural, will continue essentially as they do today, perhaps with fewer individuals due to death from shock during the shift, but with the same basic political and economic arrangements. Distribution of goods and services will adjust to deal with the goods and skills available, and life will go on as before. Newcomers who drift into such communities are likely to find themselves rebuffed, as the known is far more reliable and comforting than the unknown from a stranger. Thus, strangers wandering into such communities find themselves moving on, having been made to feel distinctly unwelcome, if not encouraged at gunpoint, to do so from the start. though widely unreported and discreetly secretive, many people in cities or operating in the professions have sought to arrange settlements for themselves and friends or others of a like mind. It is reported that NASA employees have established monolithic dome communities for themselves, co-workers, and extended families. Those with connections to the elite have been rumored to have burrowed into rock in Alberta, Canada, and the Ozarks, well-stocked enclaves. Due to the number of untried relationships, which invariably hold surprises, these planned communities rarely work out. Hidden agendas, personality quirks, and attempts to dominate the group tend to fracture such arrangements, and there is a parting of the ways. Spontaneous group formation will be the most prevalent mode in the chaos of the early days of the aftertime. Crisis brings out the worst and best in individuals. Heroes and leadership, a sense of responsibility for the larger group, and a willingness to share offset by demonstrations of utter selfishness. When fear takes hold, desertion of loved ones, no matter how frail and desperate they may be, and loud demands to be taken care of before all others. Thus, survivors will find themselves with their truth test in regard to what individuals they might want to join with or avoid. Those who have run from the cities will find themselves wandering for a time, but most likely will settle into either one, a frank wilderness living with makeshift tents and hunting and gathering for food. Two, farmsteads where the farming family finds the newcomers to their liking and needs willing hands. And three, water world living where a boat or houseboat is constructed or located and coastlines traveled. End of the quote from Spontaneous Groups, written December 6, 2003. Leadership will have to be earned, not assumed, based on former titles or rank. And the type of government that emerges will depend on the spiritual nature of the survival groups. The good-hearted will find less need for rules, rules replaced by cooperation. The self-centered will adopt the rules of a prison colony, ruled by the strong and ruthless. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Government Collapse. We are not describing a world where the established government is likely to continue as it was. We are describing a world where new forms of government will emerge. The type will depend on the nature of the group of people. As we have detailed, there will be an increasing separation of service to other from the self-centered. Those groups oriented towards service to other will not require the same controls that are required today. Rather than the problem of citizens stealing from each other, held in check only by the enforcement of law, these new communities will share. Consideration will be the rule rather than the rule of law. And for those group oriented increasingly to service to self, no laws or corps of police could hold the self-serving actions in check. There, the rule of law is supplanted by the rule of the strong. How will the governments take being so supplanted? Will they attempt to collect taxes, order cooperation, or demand allegiance? Some lone individuals will attempt to do so, perhaps in small bands, but where there is no food and the citizenry is essentially homeless, these attempts will turn about on the so-called representatives of the people. Where is the government assistance? What does the government anticipate doing for its citizenry? Why, when the government was assuring the population that they should not be alarmed by the approaching comet, should the populace now give any heed to the so-called government? Any attempt to continue federal or state-level government will in all likelihood be short-lived. On the local level, there may be some continuance according to the competence of the local government. Leadership will have to be earned. And this is the end of the quote from Zeta Talk, Government Collapse, written prior to July 15, 1995. New forms of government will emerge, some quite different than expected. Many communities will find they are led by children or by women. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Government. The aftertime will find most of mankind in a dearth of government directives. Even small towns governed by mayors well known to the city streets and to all, and traveling bands governed by chieftains will feel the lack. Insanity, depression, Loss of life and confusion will remove the firm hand so familiar from governing. Families will look to their elders, the family man, the religious leader, and find them all staring, shaking their heads, and unable to speak. In these situations, leadership arises from the needy, natural leaders emerging. Often they are children, to whom most of life is startling and strange, the unfamiliar presented almost daily. To the child, this is more an adventure, an opportunity to act without constant parental admonitions. They will make suggestions and be allowed to proceed, and often lead their dazed and depressed parents and elders about like rag dolls. Beyond the children, who will be inventive and energetic in the main, women will assume command by doing daily chores. After the shift, women will wash and clean, gather and cook a meal, and thus be looked upon as someone who can direct activities. When the depression clears and survivors begin looking about them, determining if they should seek out a government rep or make a report, perhaps seek help from their government, a different conclusion will arise. Initiating, observing, and offering to help and sharing has taken place. This is the service to other society of your future, and once established by survival groups, should not be supplanted by ego-driven directives by the power-hungry. Tell them to sit back down and fall silent, as you did so much better before they found their tongue. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Government, written October 19, 2002. Zeta Talk has stated that the world will drop into the time-honored barter system as things deteriorate going into the pole shift, and especially for life after the shift. Those in the working class, used to doing a hard day's work and familiar with farming and construction, will dust themselves off and recover quickly, hardly grieving for the assets they have lost. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Barter System. We predict that long before the shift, a barter system will be replacing the current paper money system. The value of the dollar in all countries will be falling, such that in any transaction, one or both parties will feel they are getting a fair deal only if a thing, not a representation, is given or received. This is a common practice in countries where the dollar is falling, and a natural migration as the thought occurs readily to mankind, the barter system being recent in their cultural evolution. What will this mean for the common man, and what will it mean for the rich? The common man will find they are pleased with themselves if they have had the foresight to secure goods of value, such as seeds or tools or dried food. The value of appliances that are dead and not able to run, even of cars unable to run over broken roads, will be zero. The value of items that can increase worth, such as a needle and thread which can repair clothing, otherwise worthless, or a shovel that can create a garden, otherwise a weed patch, will balloon. The rich will, of course, whine endlessly and try to convince anyone who will listen that their goods will return in value, which it will not. Monies will be used as a medium of exchange, as will jewels and art, in some settings, for a brief period of time. This will occur until those being offered these items at bargain prices realize the shift has happened worldwide, and rescue and a return to civilization as they knew it will not occur. Perhaps months, but more likely weeks, and only in limited settings. Better to stock up on things that will have value, candles and matches, school books and a guitar, than what the rich treasure. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Barter System, written December 15, 2001. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.